he threw vivid viral. Praise be to the heavens. Commerce stops for no man.
Chapter 69. Bonnie Gregor is doing some packing. Her mum is overseeing the operation, and her kids, Mimi and Maxie, are doing their best to help. Bonnie knows what to pack. She has watched an awful lot of influencers online in the last few days. She used to do this for fun, but now she is doing it for research. She packs a selection of bikinis. They won't expect that of you, surely, says her mum, Lois. Who advertises paint in a bikini? Influencers do, mum, says Bonnie, with the sigh of someone who knows more than a parent. She has lost a bit of weight in the past few days, but she still wouldn't describe herself as beach body ready.
Flensers do, parrots Mimi, currently attempting a cartwheel on the bed.
Bonnie has already packed indoor clothes and outdoor clothes. She has packed jumpers for the evening, a nice dress from M&S for smart, and she has packed shoes for every occasion.
You won't get any more in there, says Lois. The zip will go.
Mimi crashes to the floor. Maxie puts her arms around her sister.
I'm going to have to, says Bonnie. I haven't even started on my bits and bobs yet.
They won't be photographing her in her underwear. She's fairly certain of that. But you have to be the full package.
Take another case, says Lois. We've got an old one of your dad's in the loft. I'll fetch it down.
Can I help? Asks Maxie.
Can't take another case, says Bonnie, trying to choose between two identical black blouses before packing them both.
She wonders if anyone else sweats when they are packing.
Go over your lines again, Lois says.
Her mum is as excited as she is. Bonnie knows her mum has always been proud of her, and she knows that not all mums are proud of their daughters. But even so, Bonnie is so happy to see her mum so happy. Bonnie gets it. If one of her children suddenly got the job of their dreams, her heart would burst. As she watches Mimi and Maxie play dress-up with one of her bras, she wonders what is it they might end up doing.
They haven't given me my lines yet, says Bonnie to Lois, wondering if she needs eight pairs of shoes, and deciding that she does. I think I have to make them up.
Well, you're very good at that, says Lois.
I couldn't do it, I wouldn't know what to say. You've always been a talker, though. That yellow top won't go with anything. Always chatting away. I don't know where you get it from. On my life, I don't. I like that blouse. Make sure the iron's not too hot in the hotel. Use it on a towel. Test it out.
Maxie, that doesn't go up your nose, darling.
They'll have an iron in the hotel, won't they? It'll be that sort of hotel, won't it? Iron, ensuite, minibar, the works. What's the name? I'll look it up.
They haven't told me my hotel yet, says Bonnie.
Maxie, not up Mimi's nose either. They're meeting me off the plane and driving me.
Bonnie wishes they would tell her the name of the hotel. She'd like to look at everything before she goes.
Look at the rooms, see if there's a restaurant, see if there's room service.
She can just imagine that, having breakfast delivered. Maxie and Mimi brought her breakfast in bed on Mother's Day, a packet of custard creams and a flower Maxie had kept in her pocket. So, yes, it would be nice to have the name of the hotel. But perhaps influencers are a bit cooler about that sort of thing.
I've got all sorts planned with the kids, says Lois. We're going to visit Graham.
Yes, Graham, shouts Maxie. Graham, repeats Mimi.
You know, Graham from the club. He's got an allotment and he says the kids can do some digging. I've bought them some stickers too. There's a mark on the back of those jeans.
We'll have a whale of a time.
We see a whale, squeals Maxie.
Bonnie is now resorting to sitting on the clothes in her case.
And you don't need to ring every day, says Lois, if you're busy. I know you'll be rushing around doing your influencing.
We can all go on holiday when I get back, says Bonnie.
She's never been able to say anything like that before. She's heard people say it on TV, and now it's her turn.
Me, you, the kids, wherever you fancy. France, Florida,
the moon, suggests Maxie.
Bonnie really has a lot to thank that Felicity Wollaston for. She clearly believed in her. Bonnie had thought of sending Felicity an email, thanking her, but she doesn't want to seem uncool. Felicity does these deals all the time, and Bonnie is keen to fit in, to take all this in her stride. She will send Felicity a thank you afterwards. Maybe take her to lunch when she's back from the trip. Is that uncool too? I don't need a holiday, says Lois. You enjoy the money, you've earned it. Spoil the kids. You're really not getting anything more in that case. I'm fetching the old one. I can't take another case, says Bonnie. The kids zoom out of the room in search of a whale. You can take two cases, says Lois. I'm already taking another case, says Bonnie. What other case? It's part of the job, says Bonnie. You've watched unboxing videos? Lois shakes her head. Opening something on camera, like a new product, a surprise, and then you can record your reactions, so it's real. And you're going to do that with paint? Organic paint, Mum, says Bonnie. They've got a new product. They want me to take it with me and then open it on camera. They're sending it to me today. No way you won't take a peek first, says Lois. You know what you're like at Christmas. It's got a lock, says Bonnie. I get the combination on camera and then open it. And people watch that, Lois says. It's very popular, says Bonnie. She's just watched a makeup influencer from Austria open a box of concealer up an Alp. Lois goes into the pose and voice of a customs officer. Excuse me, madam, did you pack this bag yourself? Bonnie and Lois laugh together. Her mum hasn't had the easiest time of it lately. Who has? And it's lovely to see her dancing eyes. Honestly, this whole thing is a dream. Who knew that things like this could happen to people like her? Whether it's uncool or not, Bonnie decides she will take Felicity out for lunch the moment she gets back. Chapter 70. Killing someone in a prison is very easy, even in a Dubai prison. The place is full of murderers who will do anything for money, and that's before you even get to the prisoners. And why had Rob been hired to kill Courtney Lewis in the first place? A girl from Essex, caught with a bag of money. Lou Bay's money, no doubt. So is Lou Bay panicking? And if Lou Bay is panicking, should Rob be panicking? Rob thinks again about the layers he has built around himself, the layers of expendable people who protect him. It occurs to him now, probably later than it should, that he is one of Lou Bay's expendable layers. Perhaps they need to meet, finally. How would Rob go about that? The more immediate question, of course, is who might Lou Bay be worried about? Who is getting too close for comfort? Must be Amy Wheeler, no? She's bang in the middle of it. What if she's figured it all out? Rosie D'Antonio is smart too. She writes books, doesn't she? And the old guy Amy is with, the father-in-law, Eddie reckons, ex-cop, for what that's worth. What if they've put their heads together? What if they've headed to Dubai and that's why Lou Bay wanted Courtney Lewis killed? With Eddie out of the picture and things getting closer to home, Rob thinks it might be time to break the habit of a lifetime and kill Amy Wheeler himself. No one else seems capable. Mickey Moody comes back with two pints. You look stressed. Maybe Mickey could do it, or help at least. Keep an eye out for Amy Wheeler arriving in Dubai. Rob picks up his pint. Work. Mickey laughs. Why do you all work? I don't get it. I like it, Mickey, says Rob. You like the stress? I like to be busy, says Rob. You fancy a job, by the way? A job? Mickey Moody laughs. Listen, you know I never ask what any of you boys do for a living. But I know I don't want to be a part of it. No offence. I just enjoy the golf. It'd only be sitting at the airport for a day or two, says Rob, keeping an eye out for someone. Mickey shakes his head. Not for all the money in the world. 30 grand, says Rob. 100 if you're interested in something more serious. Mickey looks at him. That's a different way of living, you know. Rob smiles into his pint. A different way of living. Too late for all that.
Sorry, Mickey, I shouldn't have asked.
That's okay, son, says Mickey.
Nice to know someone doesn't think I'm useless.
You're a useless putter, says Rob, and Mickey clinks his glass against Rob's.
There is something admirable about people like Mickey, Rob supposes. Rob's got a few old friends who never got tempted, who kept their souls safe and raised families and lived in small houses in small towns. Then there are others, like Eddie, who've skirted around the business, poking their heads up every time they needed a payday. But Rob is in it for life. Death is his life. Death is what he is good at. So no panicking. There might be three people on his trail, but he has an advantage. Ordinarily, tracking someone like Amy Wheeler would be an enormous headache, with favours called in all over the place, police officers bribed, all at some cost. But Amy has chosen to travel with one of the most famous women in the world, and that makes Rob's job an awful lot easier. He has alerts set up on all the big social media sites. If anyone posts an excited selfie with Rosie D'Antonio anywhere in the world, he will hear about it. Perhaps it will be Dubai. Perhaps it will be somewhere else. It doesn't really matter, because the moment he sees a selfie, Rob will go into action himself. Needs must, and murder's not so difficult. Wear gloves, and don't drive the getaway car too fast. Perhaps he should kill the father-in-law too. Better safe than sorry. So, no, Rob won't lose any sleep over Amy Wheeler just yet. Will he lose sleep over François Loubet? Perhaps a little. But Rob has never needed a lot of sleep. He's like Maggie Thatcher in that regard. And besides, when you're in the business of death, it comes with the territory.
Chapter 71. This time, Steve doesn't duck when he gets out of the helicopter. You don't need to show Steve anything twice. Had it only been 5 days since he'd last been at this house, confronting Gary Goff about his daughter's behaviour, he sees Gary Goff approach the helicopter. Steve extends his hand.
Sorry, Gary, needed somewhere quiet to land and didn't know who else to ask.
No problem, says Gary. Not everyone with a helipad doesn't mind breaking the law.
Everyone with a helipad is a crook, says Rosie, also shaking Gary's hand.
I'm Rosie.
Welcome to the New Forest, says Gary. I'm a legitimate businessman.
Amy, says Amy, sizing up Gary.
I hear you used to smuggle cocaine on submarines.
Gary shrugs and turns to Steve.
What's this all about? Looks super dodgy. Any way I can get involved?
I am Hank, says Hank, bringing up the rear. I am Dutch.
I can believe that, says Gary, shaking Hank's hand.
Someone was trying to kill Rosie, says Steve, and now someone's trying to kill Amy.
Gary gives a fair enough expression. You know, when I see an ex-cop, a celebrity, a bodyguard and a Dutch guy, I smell money.
Well, I smell danger, says Hank. So if they find me dead, tell the police that these three did it.
I haven't said anything except no comment to a police officer in over 30 years, says Gary.
Yes, of course, says Hank. In which case, just avenge my death.
Gary leads them towards the house. On a large patio in the far distance, Steve sees Lauren Goff, the schoolgirl extortionist, playing with a friend. They are laughing at videos on the friend's phone. To his great surprise, Steve sees that the friend is Molly Bright. The girls haven't spotted this unusual new gang. Helicopters must be a familiar sight here. Steve looks at Gary and motions towards the girls in surprise.
You were right, says Gary. Your little lecture. When I grew up, I had to fight. No one gave me anything. I had to scrap for it.
Oh, boo-hoo, says Amy.
But Lauren's got everything and she still fights, says Gary. Which made her a bully.
We've been chatting. She wants to be a vet, but she never told me.
High suicide rate, vets, says Rosie.
I made her apologise to Molly, says Gary. They hugged and they haven't been off YouTube since.
Steve nods. They are now walking around the side of the house and Steve sees the large gravel turning circle at the front of the house.
Where are you headed? Gary asks. You all right for a lift?
Tony Taylor's coming to pick us up, says Steve. He's just retuned a school minibus.
I'm not getting in a minibus, says Rosie.
No disrespect to anyone.
I've got a Range Rover, says Gary, pointing to his Range Rover.
Thank you kindly, says Rosie, and walks to the Range Rover. Did you really used to smuggle cocaine in submarines?
No, says Gary. Submersibles. Gary opens one of the back doors of his car for Rosie, but she stays still until he shuts it and opens the driver's door instead. Tony Taylor's minibus approaches. Rosie gets into the driver's seat of the Range Rover.
So I shall see you all in Axley this evening?
Steve nods. The Brass Monkey, 7:30. First question at 8. Tony's minibus pulls up with the unnecessary flourish of a wheel spin. There is a woman in her early 70s in the passenger seat. She exits the minibus as Tony walks around from the driver's side. She is positively glowing.
You must be Felicity, says Steve. A pleasure to meet you.
And you, says Felicity. Thank you for letting me use your home. I've tidied your cupboards for you.
Much obliged, says Steve. By and large, I never open them.
And by the way, says Felicity, I love trouble.
Steve smiles. Talking of trouble. Tony gives Steve a big hug, then gives Amy a big hug, and then stops in front of Henk, who has his arm outstretched.
I am Henk.
And I'm Tony Taylor, and I believe you're sleeping on my sofa this evening. I've washed the cushion covers.
I've washed the cushion covers, says Felicity.
I didn't even know you could, says Tony, turning back to Steve. What's the big plan?
All will be revealed at the pub quiz, says Steve, feeling truly relaxed for the first time in a week. But first, I have a cat to see. As Steve opens the minibus door, he sees Lauren Goff leap down the steps from the front door of Gary Goff's house. She makes a beeline for the Range Rover.
You're Rosie D'Antonio, Lauren says to Rosie.
Accept no substitute, says Rosie.
You're famous, says Lauren.
I try, agrees Rosie.
Lauren looks down for a moment, nervous. She looks at her dad, then back at Rosie.
Can I get a selfie?
Rosie smiles. Ever the pro.
Chapter 72. Eddie had a decision to make. Amy, Rosie and Steve had flown to England. A little bribe at the airfield was enough to tell him that. They'd landed somewhere in the New Forest. Eddie had looked up the New Forest on the map. Lot of trees. The clue was in the name. So Eddie has headed over too, just to keep an eye on everything. And no need to tell Rob Kenner this time. Amy Wheeler was someone else's problem now, so Eddie could concentrate on the job at hand. He still got most of Rob's 15 grand, so he booked himself into a hotel called The Pig. It's the perfect place to hole up for a couple of days and to do what needs to be done. It's quiet, great food, lovely staff, private. You can see deer out of your window in the morning.
Is Eddie ready?
He's still not sure. It has to be exactly right before he makes his move. He's only going to get one shot, but he still needs the answer to this final tricky question. Can you shoot somebody through a pane of glass in a high building? Would it deflect the bullet? If you can, he is all set. Eddie heads down to the hotel dining room. It is a relief, after Ireland, not to be mobbed. Perhaps this will be the final stop on the impromptu world tour he finds himself on. That would be nice. He could handle staying here until the deed is done. There's even a herb garden. As Eddie reaches the third step from the bottom of the staircase, he has a view into the restaurant.
It's classy, but also cosy. That's a nice combination. He's already read the menu, of course he has, he's only human, and is looking forward to the fish and chips. The fish has been caught locally, and the potatoes grown locally. As for the batter, that's anyone's guess. There is sunlight pouring into the room, and before Eddie reaches the bottom step, he sees it glint off a ruby and emerald brooch of a crouching tiger. There, at a window table, is Rosie D'Antonio, talking to an older guy. The guy is wearing a waxed barber jacket and purple cords. You saw that a lot with people who've had to wear suits all their lives. No idea how to dress without one. Eddie backs up the stairs one by one, making no sound. An elderly couple walks past him on the stairs, and he gives them a gentle wave. So Rosie D'Antonio is in the hotel. Perhaps she's staying here. That would make things even easier. Time for Eddie to get room service and finalise his plan. Chapter 73. I'm sorry, says Derek Charters. I didn't realise we were dressing up. Rosie laughs. This isn't me dressing up. A new suit, purple cords. I'm sorry to get straight down to business, but did you take a look at everything Steve sent you?
Steve, is it? Says Derek.
New man of yours, I suppose.
No, says Rosie. Not for want of trying, though. This new forest trout is delicious, by the way. When did England learn to do food?
90s, says Derek.
I took a look, and Vivid Viral Media seems to be up front.
Up front? Rosie is surprised by this.
They're an agency, says Derek. Long established. Changed course recently, but that's business, isn't it? It seems that this Felicity Wollaston spotted a gap in the market. Social media influencers. Huge sums of money flying around. There's £150,000, for example, to a man called Mark Gooch. £200,000 to a man named Jackson Lynch. It's big business.
But not dodgy, asks Rosie, as far as you can tell. It's a real company, says Derek Charters, with a real history. But there is a question I would be asking if I thought this company was being used to launder money.
What might that question be? Rosie asks. Why did they choose this particular company? Derek says. Why did the cuckoo choose this particular nest? It won't have been random. That's far too dangerous.
So somebody must already have had a connection with Felicity Wollaston, says Rosie.
I'd say so, says Derek. That's business.
Did I ever tell you about the time I bought an Estonian bank?
Let's say yes, so I don't have to hear about it, says Rosie.
How's Carol, by the way?
Oh, she's right as rain, says Derek. Living in Jamaica with a ski instructor.
In Jamaica with a ski instructor? Derek shrugs.
Carol's stories were always better than yours, says Rosie.
Why the interest in Vivid Viral? Asks Derek. Anything I can make some money out of?
Ever the investment banker, Derek, says Rosie.
Murders. They're trying to kill a good friend of mine.
Murders are your speciality, says Derek. No one is trying to kill you, though, I hope.
Well, funnily enough, someone was, says Rosie. A Russian billionaire.
I don't suppose you're a hitman.
With my arthritis? Says Derek. Rosie laughs. It's funny, across a lifetime, the people you pick up. It's often the most unexpected ones who stick around. There are friendships forged in fire which end up disappearing like smoke, and other casual, nodding friendships which will stay with you for the rest of your life. From the corner of her eye, Rosie catches a movement. It's on the staircase in the hallway and looks an awful lot like a tracksuit bottom moving slowly up the stairs. Eddie Flood. How has he managed to follow them again? Here's a guy who doesn't give up. She will have to tell Amy immediately, of course, but a further troubling thought occurs to Rosie. Of all the places to stay, why is Eddie here? What if Vasily Karpin hasn't given up on her. Jeff Nolan was supposed to be brokering a deal with him, but Jeff Nolan is very missing, presumed very dead. Has Rosie taken her eye off the ball? What if Eddie had been hired to kill her all along? Shooting at Amy was just to get her out of the way.
Can I top you up?
Asks Derek, tipping the wine bottle towards her. Rosie puts her hand over the top of her glass. I'm going to stick to water, I think.
Rosie D'Antonio and water, says Derek. Goes together like ski instructors and Jamaica.
Rosie musters a smile. On the staircase, Eddie has disappeared. But she knows he will be here for a reason. She needs to focus a little. Because while Rosie is busy protecting Amy, is anybody busy protecting her?
Chapter 74.
Amy and Steve are waiting outside the Brass Monkey. Amy has to admit it has a certain charm. The white portico and thick oak door are garlanded with red and yellow flowers. Amy doesn't know what kind of flowers they are. All flowers are roughly the same, aren't they, apart from the colours? The summer air is slowing everything and everyone. Ponies chew on hanging baskets with a leisurely concentration, while human beings vape and gossip all around them. There is a burst of amber light and laughter each time the door opens.
Happy to be back? Amy asks.
Steve nods.
Ever gonna leave again?
Shouldn't have thought so, says Steve.
Do we really have to do the quiz? Asks Amy.
You'll see, says Steve.
What's the point of vaping, do you know?
No idea, says Amy.
What flowers are these?
No idea, says Steve. I've missed these chats, says Amy, and Steve laughs.
It's true, though. Amy likes to hear about New Forest roadworks and missing postmen. She likes to hear about the normality of life, though she has no interest in living it.
Rosie is the first teammate to appear, carrying an overnight bag. Amy looks at her quizzically.
Something wrong with the pig? She asks.
It's almost perfect, says Rosie, putting down her bag by the picnic bench. Food grade, terrific barman. Soft beds, the views, honestly, all you could ask for.
If I have one gripe, it's that there's a hitman there.
Rosie sits.
Not Eddie, Amy asks.
Persistent little bugger, says Rosie. Staying on that subject, I wonder if we know whether Vasily Karpin is still trying to kill me. You seem to have forgotten him in all the excitement.
Starts Amy. Sorry to be all me, says Rosie.
Jeff was handling it, says Amy.
Jeff was handling it, repeats Rosie.
That's good, that's put my mind at rest. Dead Jeff will protect me. The guy in the BMW full of bullet holes has got my back.
BMW full of bullet holes is a good name for a...
Not now, Stevie, says Rosie. Whether Eddie is here to kill you or me, we should probably go inside, says Amy. Rosie is right, though. Amy should be thinking about Vasily Karpin. He's still out there somewhere and still, presumably, gunning for her client.
Client.
Funny to think how quickly Rosie turned from being her client to being something quite different. A friend? It's not quite that. When Amy has more time on her hands, she will work out just what sort of relationship she and this woman, old enough to be her grandmother, have developed.
You ever have a drive-by shooting in Axley? Rosie asks Steve.
Someone crashed a moped into a bollard once, says Steve. But that's the worst we've had.
You ready to quiz?
No, of course not, says Rosie. Before I go in, I need to know exactly who's there, exactly what's going to happen, and exactly how early I can leave.
My normal quiz team will be there, says Steve.
John and Jyoti, they don't know we're coming, so my replacement, Martin, the loss adjuster from Lymington, will be there, and apart from that, it's just us.
There is an approaching voice.
What a time I've had of it this afternoon.
Is there a sight more beguiling, I wonder, than an English churchyard? The paths of glory lead but to the grave. That is your Thomas Gray, I believe. You will correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe it is Gray.
And Henk, says Steve.
Hello, Henk. You fancy a pint?
When in Rome, says Henk.
He looks at the flowers climbing across the entrance to the pub.
Ah, Crocosmia.
Beautiful. You know they are South African originally. Okay, Henk can be on our team too, says Steve. We all set?
Steve, I implore you to tell us what is going on, says Henk.
I implore you.
Through this door, says Steve, and leads his motley team into the pub.
Amy has been in the Brass Monkey a few times before. Christmas, Debbie's birthday, 1 year. Tonight it is rammed, the quiz being the weekly highlight of the Axley social calendar. Every table is filled with men in short-sleeved shirts and women in floral blouses, doing the pre-hunch of teams agreeing on names. At a table in the far corner, Amy sees Jyoti half stand and raise her arm to grab their attention. John is setting down three drinks on their table, and the loss adjuster, Martin, sits with his back to them. Steve snakes his way through the tables towards his friends. Just before Steve reaches the table, Amy finally understands why they are there. If she were the sort of person to gasp, she would gasp. Martin turns, a handsome black guy in a cloth cap, his salt and pepper beard not hiding for one moment that Martin from Lymington is, as alive as you like, Jeff Nolan.
You look well, Jeff, says Steve, considering.
Jeff gives an impressed smile.
You found me.
Steve smiles back.
Who else would have dropped the information about Courtney Lewis into a Brass Monkey lock-in? Couldn't think of any other way to get in touch, says Jeff.
Who's Jeff? Asks Jyoti. Hello, Steve. If Jeff is surprised to see Steve, he hides it with great skill. He stands and hugs Amy.
So you're not dead, says Amy.
Why would he be dead? Says John. He's a loss adjuster.
From Lymington, adds Jyoti. Kept 5 pints of my blood in the fridge, says Jeff. Fired a few shots in the Beamer and tipped it over the front seat.
That's what I said you would do, says Amy. Rosie offers her cheek to him and says,
Ah, the elusive Jeff. The elusive, surprisingly handsome Jeff. I'm Rosie.
That's Rosie D'Antonio, says John to Jyoti. At the quiz.
Amy doing a good job looking after you? Jeff asks.
Terrible, says Rosie. But we're having a lot of fun.
What's going on, Jeff? Says Amy.
What is he doing here, in Axley? How did Steve know he would be here? And is Henk right about him? And the most important question of all, are they really going to have to do an entire pub quiz before she finds out?
It suited me to be dead for a few days, says Jeff. Francois Lube was trying to kill me.
How do you know it was Lube? Steve asks.
I've got the emails to prove it, says Jeff.
Where have you been staying? Steve asks.
Well, says Jeff, full disclosure, I've been in the spare room at yours.
Huh, says Steve.
Apart from the last couple of nights, a man and a woman showed up, so I made a sharp exit. I've been sleeping in a ditch.
You look good on it, says Rosie. It was a comfortable ditch, says Jeff.
This is it, is it? They're just going to make small talk.
Why are you here? Amy asks in frustration. In Axley?
Mainly because Lube was trying to kill me, says Jeff. But also, I love a quiz. I just thought, where better to hide out while you solve the case?
And Lube's trying to kill me too, Amy asks.
With a bit of help from Joe Blow, says Jeff.
And who's Joe Blow? Amy asks.
Jeff nods over to the bar.
Henk, of course.
They all look over towards Henk, currently trying to carry 4 pints at once.
Who's Henk? Says Jyoti.
But Henk says you're working with Lube, says Rosie. Other way round, says Jeff. You'll see.
We still need a team name, says John.
Henk is focusing his eyes on the carpet as he weaves through the crowd, and then, flicking his eyes towards his destination, he sees Jeff. The voice of a young woman now pipes through the speakers.
Okay, brass monkey, pens in hand and brains in gear, please. Question one. On which soap opera did actor Max Highfield begin his career?
Henk reaches the group. Steve motions for them all to sit down at an empty table next to his usual team.
We quiz, then we discuss who is trying to kill whom. Agreed?
No, says Henk. We need to sort this out right now. Steve, you have tricked me. Jeff, we must talk immediately.
Steve jabs his finger at Henk's chest. Henk, I've put my priorities on hold for a number of days now. I've been tied up, I've been threatened with a gun, I've been in a helicopter with a hangover, and I've eaten kale. Now sit down, shut up, and for the next 90 minutes, or more if there's a tie break, let me quiz.
The quizmaster repeats the question.
That's Max Highfield.
I definitely would.
On which soap opera did he start his career?
Henk nods at Steve, and as they both sit, he says,
EastEnders.
You're sure? Says Steve.
Definite, says Henk.
And I know Max Highfield, so maybe we can get a point for that.
It's Coronation Street, says Jeff.
Guaranteed. And I also know Max Highfield. So,
EastEnders, says Henk.
Coronation Street, says Jeff.
Henk looks at Jeff.
Jeff looks at Henk.
Well, you can't both be right, says Steve.
Neither man will back down and break their stare.
Oh, for God's sake, says Amy,
taking the pen and answer sheet from Jeff.
It's Hollyoaks.
Okay, question two.
Chapter 75. Bonnie Gregor is stretched out in her childhood bed, staring at the ceiling. The ceiling is a painting of the night sky, dark blue and covered in stick-on gold stars. Her dad painted it for her when she was 6 or 7, and when she was a little girl, she would sometimes stare at it all night. It seems so immense, so full of a twinkling promise. A world her dad had made for her, and so close she could almost touch it. Then, after her dad died, she would stare at it all night and wonder where he might be. If he was up there, and if he was all alone. As she grew taller, sometimes she would stand on her bed on tiptoes and reach up to touch it. Lying here now, Bonnie realizes that if you look at the stars, the sky seems full. But if you look at the darkness, the sky seems empty. Tonight, Bonnie is looking at the stars. She's flying tomorrow, the 4 p.m. from Heathrow. It says on the website to get to the airport at least 3 hours before departure, so that's 1 p.m. It says on Google that the journey to Heathrow will be just over an hour. You never know with daytime traffic, so she has allowed 2 hours, which means leaving at 11 a.m. and then, just for added peace of mind, she has given herself an extra hour and has decided to leave at 10 a.m. That should do it. Her next-door neighbour's husband has agreed to drive her to Heathrow for petrol money because he loves planes. She looks up at the golden stars. She has mapped them in her brain. 41 of them. Only 3 peeling, even after all this time. She goes through her lines once again, quietly. The kids are sleeping next door in her mum's room. They're very excited to be staying at grandma's for the week. They're not half as excited as their grandma is. She's written a few things she thinks might work. What is paint? Paint is colour. And what is colour? Colour can be anything you want. Colour can make you happy. It can brighten your day and slap a smile on your face. A bright orange, bosh. A bright yellow, bosh, bosh. She is experimenting with bosh because she doesn't really have a catchphrase and it would be useful to have one.
Something to say when you can't think of anything else. Something to fill in the gaps. She's not sure if she's cracked it yet, though. Splosh. Is that better? So if paint is a colour and colour is happiness, a tin of paint is a tin of happiness. That's the bit she's most confident about. She's been through the whole thing with her mum over and over. She will try splosh out on her in the morning. The bag arrived today, not a case, as she had expected, but a brown leather holdall. She has learnt the names of all the colours in the range. Lipstick red, hallow yellow, pretty pink, lady lime, hi-ho silver, baby blue and agent orange. She knows all about vegan paint, breathable paint and non-toxic nursery paint. She knows all about zero VOC paints, volatile organic compounds, compounds with a high vapour pressure at ordinary room temperatures, and is confident that she can talk about them while sitting by a pool drinking a Mai Tai. She hasn't told her mum yet, but the first half of the money came through this morning. She checked her balance at the cash point in Morrison's, and there it was. The other thing she hasn't told her mum, though she's certain it's fine, is the way she is being paid. It is something to do with Vivid Viral Media's tax systems. They explained it, but Bonnie's probably not the right person to understand, so she doubts her mum would be. Either way, Vivid Viral, instead of just paying her the $20,000, actually pays her $200,000, and then they arrange a transfer of the extra $180,000 to another company. It's not a scam, because Bonnie keeps the $20,000. It's fascinating, really, to see the way things are done. One day this will all be second nature to her, and she'll be able to sit her mum down and go through it all. On Bonnie's bedside table are two good luck cards, one from her mum that says, "Chase the dream," and one from the kids, of a 3D unicorn saying, "I love you." Bonnie checks her alarm once again. If she's leaving at 10, or perhaps 9:30 if she's ready, she'll make sure she's up by 6, just in case there's a last-minute crisis. She can make breakfast for the kids and her mum. She lies back again. Forest paints. Breathe, believe, achieve. This time tomorrow she'll be on the plane, up in the night sky, up among the stars. She can talk to her dad while she's up there. Tell him all about her new adventure. Bonnie can feel her eyes beginning to shut. She is sleeping easier these days. Less to worry about, knowing she can make Maxie and Mimi happy and safe. That's the secret to happiness, isn't it? She looks up at the ceiling again and thinks about her dad with the paint roller, waiting for it all to dry, and working out exactly where to put all the stars. The perfect pattern to make his daughter happy. That's all you can do for your kids, isn't it? Try to arrange the stars. Bonnie pushes herself up and stands on her bed. She doesn't need tiptoes anymore, as she reaches up and touches the ceiling. Bonnie looks down and checks the corner of the room. Her bags are safe and sound. There's her case, with the wonky wheels, packed with every possible combination of outfit. And there's the big leather holdall, secured with a safety lock. She has lifted it, of course. There were no rules against that. And it was heavy. But then paint is heavy, isn't it? What could it be? A new colour launch? Princess Purple? Perhaps body paint or tile paint. That would actually be useful. The possibilities are endless. Bonnie shuts her eyes. She can't wait to open the bag and find out.
Chapter 76. Even with an illegal number of team members, they finished second in the quiz by 1 point. Jeff and Hank pretty much cancelled each other out, and the only question Rosie got right all evening was about Diane Keaton. She told Steve that they'd shared an orthodontist and then winked at him. Steve is still hurting, but he supposes there are more important matters at hand this evening, and when he turned his phone back on, Steve received the message he'd been waiting for. Now he has
two pieces of information for everyone. It's so nice to be home. The whole gang has decamped to Steve's living room. Felicity and Tony have also joined the crew. Steve notes they have not let go of each other's hand at any point. Good for Tony. There really is someone for everyone. He is still keeping a close eye on Felicity. Losing by 1 point, though. So close. Jyoti and John had wanted to join this little chat, but were finally dissuaded when Amy told them that an awful lot of people were being murdered, and Rosie agreed to give John an autograph. Jeff Nolan is in Steve's favourite armchair, and an audience now sits around him. Trouble settles on Jeff's lap, curls himself around Jeff's laptop. "Seems I have a fan," says Jeff, very happy with himself. "That's because of the laptop," says Steve, annoyed at Trouble's lack of loyalty. He can't resist them. "So this is from 2 days ago," says Jeff, encrypted, as always. He reads from the screen. "Dear Mr. Nolan, they say you are dead, but people say an awful lot of things, don't they? I'm afraid I don't believe them. They say you cannot pull the wool over the eyes of someone who wishes to pull the wool over your own eyes. Your lesson has been learnt, I hope. You wanted to interfere in my business, so I had to interfere in yours. But with those three strikes, I am out, and you will hear nothing more from me so long as I hear nothing more from you. I wish you no malice, but I must protect my own interests, in the same way I understand you must protect yours. So I shall look elsewhere for my helpers and leave Maximum Impact in peace. Should you decide to interfere in my business again, I shall return to interfere in yours, but for now, this is farewell. Again, I was sorry to hear about the attempt on your life. You must have made an enemy somewhere. I suspect that if you are more careful in the future, you will be quite safe. I regret that the same cannot be said of Amy Wheeler. I hear there is a mountain of evidence piling up against her. Poor Amy. Please pass on my fondest wishes to Joe Blow. With warmest regards, Francois." Jeff closes his laptop. "You see why I think this is Henk? Overwritten, obvious." "Excuse me," says Henk, on a kitchen chair, "if I don't take a lecture on what is obvious from a man who couldn't name England's leading goalscorer in the sport round." "You're going to have to let that go," says Steve. Steve can't help but blame himself, too. He'd known it was Kane, not Rooney. With that extra point, they'd have been in a tiebreak. "Henk, it could only be one of us," says Jeff. "Our client list is confidential. No one else could have known that Bella Sanchez, Mark Gooch and Andrew Fairbanks were all clients of Maximum Impact." "I agree," says Henk. "Which is how I know it is you."
"I'll go and make some tea," says Felicity, getting off the sofa. "Sorry, Steve. I don't mean to take over your house."
"I don't think there is any tea," says Steve.
"Well, there wasn't, but I bought some," says Felicity, and disappears into the kitchen. Henk shoos Trouble away, which only makes Trouble more determined to be stroked by him.
"For example," says Henk, "I couldn't have been involved in booking your Navy SEAL, Kevin, in South Carolina, unlike Jeff."
"I liked him," says Rosie. "Did he ever get out?"
"I had someone let him out yesterday," says Jeff. "I think 5 days in your panic room had been quite enough."
"So that's who's been using my Netflix account," says Rosie. "I wondered who was watching all the Guy Ritchie films and that Formula One documentary."
"He died of a bullet to the head within 8 hours of our letting him out," says Jeff. "So that's what we're dealing with. And he had no idea who'd hired him to kill Amy."
"Oh, I have the answer to that," says Steve, pulling a mobile phone from his pocket. "A man named Rob Kenner, based in Dubai, which is where it seems all roads lead."
"How did you find that out?" Amy asks.
"I took Nelson's SIM card from his phone while he was bleeding on me," says Steve. "Rob Kenner and I have been having quite the chat. I've told him I need to see him about a couple of troublesome rivals, and he's invited me for a round of golf."
"So you think Rob Kenner hired Eddie too?" asks Amy. No idea, says Steve. But he hired Kevin to kill you, and he hired Nelson to kill you, so you'd have to guess so.
Who else would have hired him?
There's no possibility, I suppose, Jeff, says Rosie, that Eddie has been sent to kill me by Vasily Karpin. He just shot at Amy to get her out of the way. Jeff weighs this up. Let me try and get in touch with Vasily. I mean, if you would, says Rosie. I don't mean to be a fusspot, but somebody might be trying to kill me, and I think I'm still paying you. And we think that Rob Kenner is working for Lube, Amy asks.
Correct, says Jeff. And Lube is working with Henk.
And Lube is working with Jeff, says Henk. It has to be one of us.
Oh, this is a bit of fun, says Rosie.
If Steve is completely honest with himself, he threw away another point when he'd insisted that Lily Savage had taken over from Terry Wogan as the host of Blankety Blank. That will be keeping him awake tonight, forgetting that it was Les Dawson in between. But for now, he must concentrate. Back to the business at hand. Time to let Jeff Nolan and Henk Van Veen know what he's found out.
Neither of you is working with Lube, says Steve.
Even Trouble turns to look at him. Because anybody with any real skill in investigation would have spotted something else in your files.
Susan Knox, says Henk.
Who? Says Tony. They're head of HR, says Amy. Has access to everything.
Not Susan Knox, says Steve. Someone far more interesting.
Steve takes Henk's envelope from a coffee table. You see, Jeff certainly signed off on all these clients. 35 times. But something else happened 35 times, according to the files that Susan Knox sent us.
What?
Asks Rosie. On all 35 occasions, an introduction fee of £10,000 is paid to Max Highfield. The room is silent in amazement. Max Highfield recruited every single one of them, says Steve. Jeff laughs.
No way, says Jeff.
Max Highfield is working for Francois Lube.
I don't buy it.
Hell of a coincidence then, says Steve. He introduced each and every one of these influencers to the company. A payment of 10 grand to him for each one. Anyone here believe in coincidences?
Jeff shakes his head.
Max doesn't have the brains, Steve. And I mean, he really doesn't have the brains.
And how would Max have got Lube's email address? Says Henk.
It's in one file, a classified one.
And we're still not addressing the most important point, says Rosie.
Why did they choose Felicity's company? Can't just be random.
Why do your business through a small TV agent in Hertfordshire? That's the weak link.
That's where we can unravel all this.
She's a medium-sized TV agent, says Tony. Not small.
I agree with Rosie, says Henk. Sorry, Steve. I'm sure you used to be a perfectly adequate detective, but I think Max Highfield actually is just a coincidence.
Felicity walks back in with a pot of tea and some mugs on a tray.
Max Highfield, she says. Oh, I could tell you some stories about him.
Stories? Amy asks. All eyes are now turned to Felicity Wollaston. She smiles.
Only nice ones. I was his very first agent.
Got him the Hollyoaks job.
Max Highfield was your client, says Steve.
Always knew he'd go far, says Felicity, beaming proudly.
Chapter 77. The bright lights of Dubai shine through a panoramic window. Rob Kenner has three guns laid out on his bed in order of size. He picks up the first one, a small handgun, and poses with it.
Amy Wheeler, I presume.
Blam, blam.
He blows across the barrel. Next, he picks up a compact machine pistol.
You defeated the rest, Amy Wheeler. but you just met the best. He sprays imaginary bullets around the room, then throws it back down on the bed. He picks up the final weapon, a sawn-off shotgun. Welcome to Dubai, Amy. It'll blow you away. Kablamo.
Rob throws the gun back onto the bed. He's almost looking forward to it.
You need a job doing properly. Sometimes you gotta do it yourself.
Chapter 78.
Max wouldn't, says Felicity. He couldn't possibly, he was the sweetest boy. I went to his final show at drama school, and he couldn't act, but he had something.
Height, suggests Jeff Nolan. There is a knock at the door. Everyone looks at each other, then at Steve. One by one, Amy, Jeff, and Hank stand, pull guns and point them towards the hallway of the house. Amy then pulls a second gun from her thigh and throws it to Steve.
Blimey, says Tony.
Steve walks out into the hallway. Two heads are silhouetted behind the glass in his front door. Steve turns back to the living room. Amy is in a crouch, gun in hand. Hank is secreted behind an IKEA multimedia unit, gun up to his eye, and Jeff is standing, bold as brass, in the middle of the room, gun arm extended. Rosie is draped on the sofa, enjoying the show. Jeff nods to Steve. Steve slips his gun into his waistband and calls out,
"Yes?"
"Hampshire Police, sir," comes a voice from the other side of the door. "We're looking for an Amy Wheeler. We believe she's in your property." Amy once told Steve that the first time she enters any building, she looks for every possible escape route. Steve used to do it himself, but as he's got older, the first thing he looks for is where the loo might be.
"Sir?"
says the same voice.
"She's not here, I'm afraid," says Steve.
The mountain of evidence that Liu Bei had mentioned. Has he given up trying to kill her and is now planning to get her locked up instead?
"Gone back to London."
"If we could just double check, sir," says the voice.
"Put our minds at rest."
That should have given her enough time, Steve thinks. He opens the door a crack and is gratified to see it really is two Hampshire police officers.
"Come in," says Steve. "Come in."
As Steve leads the officers into the living room, Hank and Jeff are playing chess, each with a cup of tea. Tony and Rosie are watching Married at First Sight Australia on the TV, and Felicity is walking around the room with a plate of biscuits. Amy is nowhere to be seen. You had to hand it to the lot of them. That was quick. Steve wonders where all the guns are, and feels his own poking into his lower back.
"We have a warrant for Mrs. Wheeler's arrest," says the older detective. "If you know where she is, you'd do well to tell us."
Everyone looks at each other.
"What's she done now?" says Rosie.
"Murder, madam," says the older detective, "I'm afraid."
"That's our Amy," says Rosie.
"She left for London," says Jeff, "hours ago."
"And you are, sir?"
"Me," says Jeff. "None of your business."
"We might choose to make it our business," says the younger detective, without bravado or fear.
Jeff looks at her.
"I don't suppose you'd like a job."
"I was just thinking the same," says Hank.
"She carries herself very well."
"If she gets in touch," says the older detective, giving Steve his card, "you give me a call."
"Of course," says Steve.
"You're investigating a murder."
"So you're Steve Wheeler,"
the detective says.
"Heard a lot about you."
"Rest assured," says Steve, "I'm always happy to help out the Hampshire police." The detective sizes up the room of people in front of him.
"Look, I don't know who you all are or what you're all doing, but we're trying to investigate three murders here."
"Gosh," says Rosie, "imagine."
The younger detective looks at her.
"Are you Rosie D'Antonio?"
Rosie waves this observation away. The older detective looks at them one by one.
"I'm going to ask all of you not to leave the country."
At any other time, thinks Steve, that would be music to his ears.
Chapter 79. A lot of people are finding it hard to sleep tonight, all for their own reasons. Steve Wheeler is finding it hard to sleep because Trouble is insisting on sleeping on his chest. Steve feels that it is fair, given that he has been away for so long. Trouble doesn't ask much from him. So Max Highfield is Joe Blow. He'd made the connection as soon as he'd read the files, cross-referenced with the information Hank had given him. Max Highfield, of all people. Steve had stopped watching the Rampage movies after Rampage 3. No way someone fires a bullet on the space shuttle. Add in his connection to Felicity Wollaston, and he has to be involved in this. And he's currently in Dubai, home of Rob Kenner. Isn't that convenient? Actually, it's not convenient because it means Steve has to take yet another flight first thing in the morning. At least he got to do the quiz, though. Rose is coming with him. Jeff is staying where he is. Lube thinks Jeff might be dead, and Jeff wants to keep it that way for now. He's going to go back to the office and see what else he can find. Steve gently strokes the sleeping cat's head as he thinks about what is to come. He feels his eyes begin to close. Perhaps this will be the first night he doesn't need to walk through the streets of Axley, to sit on the bench and talk to Debbie. But won't Debbie miss him, sitting there all alone? Rosie D'Antonio is wide awake, because she is waiting for the lightest of taps on her bedroom door from Jeff Nolan. She is in Steve's spare room, and Jeff is downstairs on the sofa, despite her fairly unambiguous invitation. She will give him another 5 minutes before taking a handful of melatonin on top of a belly full of whiskey. She feels safe, at least. Steve is in the room next door, Jeff on the downstairs sofa, and Hank across the village in Tony Taylor's house. That's some fairly hefty security. She hopes Jeff will knock. They usually do, in her experience, and she hasn't slept with anyone in over 2 weeks. She has ruled Steve out now. She sees his vulnerabilities and, while ordinarily she would be happy to take advantage of them, she feels it would be inappropriate. Her therapist often accuses her of having no boundaries, so it shows what he knows. There was Kevin, the bodyguard. He was a contender. Something could have happened there, couldn't it? If he hadn't tried to kill Amy. Even then, you never know. Carlos Moss at the airport, of course, been there, done that, but would recommend to others. The drug dealer on St. Lucia, Nelson. He had a certain something until Steve shot him in the leg. Again, even then. The TV